Blog Talk Radio.
Timeless Ty, how you doing tonight?
I don't know. Took off the blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside the kitchen. Timeless is alive, man. I'm feeling some type of way. Back in the building with a heavy energy. That call in number is 929-477-2759. Let's get this thing going. The grill is lit.
Well, you definitely let it off right. The stove is lit, if you will, and there's a lot of topics that are going to create fire tonight. Yeah, we have the NFL free-for-all show on Mondays. We do have the Crossover Cafe a lot of times on Thursdays. And then we do the brunch on Sunday. But tonight is the caller's cookout. You call in, you decide what we're talking about. We do have some topics to talk about, but we are going to try to touch on most of the major sports. We have some football topics. We have some basketball topics. We have some baseball topics. And in addition to that, where we're going to start tonight, Ty, is the Wilder versus Fury boxing match. You know, Wilder came into this fight undefeated. Now, granted, boxing pundits like yourself know that if not for a 12th round knockdown of Fury in their previous fight, most people said that he won the last fight. But I'd love to get your thoughts on this fight coming into this. Who did you believe to be the favorite? You know, obviously betting lines kind of favored Wilder. What was your thoughts?
Yeah, in Vegas it did favor Wilder. The crazy part about these guys in rematches, they're better, but you don't really see too many rematch fights for Tyson Fury because Tyson Fury basically handled everybody he fought the first time around. Deontay Wilder was the only fighter that, you know, more or less gave him an interesting fight and set up for a decent payday for both of them. And I think the favorite did go to Deontay in Vegas, but to me, with Tyson being more of the technical boxer, I definitely give it a favoritism to Tyson Fury.
So, Ty, let me ask you a question because, everybody is focusing on, you know, we're going to get into the costume. We're going to get into some of the other stuff here. But one of the things that is maybe kind of an underrated story, if you will, and I'm only saying that because, obviously he's got the big-time knockout power, right? I mean, we're all aware of that. We're all aware of the knockout power that Wilder possesses. He has 42 wins. 41 of those came, by the way, a knockout. Only loss was to Fury. Only draw was to Fury. But with that said, we also know the previous fight that he had before Fury against Luis Ortiz – back in November, that fight also went 7 rounds, and most people believe that Ortiz was winning on the scorecard. If not for the KO, most people believe that Ortiz would have won that fight. But if you look at his previous, let's just say, could be wrong here, Ty. You correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think he's ever went past the fourth round. So what my question to you would be is you start looking at the last year, right, like 2018, 2017, and on, Luis Ortiz takes him to round 10, takes him to round 7. Before that, Chris Arreola takes him to round 8. But before that, Ty, you're talking about 30 fights that ended in round 1, 2, or 3. And so my question is to you, as more of the boxing pundit here, when you all of a sudden, even though you have this immense power, all of a sudden, whether it's people are figuring you out or you're just going up against better competition, and now you're having to go deeper into fights, rounds 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, does that psychologically change the game? And then number two, I think one of the underrated aspects of this fight was I started noticing in round 2 on, everybody talks about the jab Fury was landing almost at will, but he landed a lot of body shots on Wilder. And it looked like by about round 3 or 4, it was a wrap. What's your thoughts?
This is the one thing that I don't like to say about Deontay Wilder, because, you know, I am a fan of him. And, of course, since I love the sport of boxing, there is a gladiator, you know, fanism in me, if you will. So, of course, people live for the knockout. But I had to, like, learn how to accept technical boxers, and that's back when I was young up until now, like the Sugar Ray Leonard fight up against Hearns. I mean, well, yeah, Sugar Ray and Hearns or Sugar Ray and Hagler. Like, everybody lived for Hagler to take Sugar Ray's head off. And we watching Sugar Ray get points to get back in the fight, even though, I can't lie, I sort of leaned toward Hagler in that fight because Hagler was bringing the fight to Sugar Ray. So then watching Floyd do that type of stuff and win by points and basically tattoo guys when the guys get tired. Now looking at Tyson Fury, knowing that he's a heavyweight and not thinking that you're going to get a heavyweight that can be technical. And it scared me because it's like, okay, knowing that Deontay has that one-punch power that can end up laying somebody out is different. And Deontay, I never wanted to see him lose in this fashion. Like, he got stopped by towel. Like, there was a towel thrown in. I feel a certain way about that, about his corner. But I could tell when his legs were weary that something was wrong with him. And I don't like the fact that he's trying to blame it on his wardrobe, if you will. So he needs to work more on his 1-2. It was more or less a thing of him just throwing a jab. I'm trying to throw that looper right to end the fight. And I agree with you, Brian. Like, it's only been a handful of fights, if there is a handful of them, that have gone past the seventh round. And, you know, that's deep waters for him. And he luckily landed that one in the first fight. This time, Tyson Fury did what he needed to stay away from that bomb and wear him down tactically.
Yeah, and you know what? Let's talk for a moment about his trainer, because one of the things that you know that I found kind of odd, if you will, and maybe you could provide me a little bit more feedback, is I believe the man's name is Mark Breland. You correct me if I'm wrong, Ty, but just from a casual fan, you know, I've watched a lot of boxing through the years, you know, from Foreman and Hagler and, you know, Sweetness all the way up to Tyson, and then obviously up till now the Klitschko boys and what have you. And I only say that to say this. I don't ever remember a time where a trainer threw in the towel and he's gotten as much criticism as he's gotten by his own fighter. And I'll take it one step further, Ty. I thought he could have threw the towel in 2 rounds earlier. Like, I don't like, you know, he's talking about, you know, hey, look, you know, if you're a warrior, you go out on your shield, you know, you die in the ring and this and that. And I'm thinking, you know, Wilder, you're a young dude. You've got the rest of your life ahead of you. I mean, how many times, Ty, have we seen in the past a boxer take too many punches to the head and all of a sudden they're not the same dude? But like I said, I just want to look at this and get your opinion. But I felt like it was a perfect stoppage. If anything, I thought it went a little long.
I don't know if it went a little long because I think the fight was still there, but just the way that Deontay looked, and he looked, there was one point that he threw a punch and he missed Tyson Fury, and he looked like he was ready to fall already. So it was like, it wasn't like he was getting beaten up right there. It was just more or less, I don't know if it was that equilibrium of his eardrum being ruptured or something like that, and his balance never being there, because I've never had my eardrum ruptured, so I definitely couldn't tell, you know, how dizzy he was. I've been dizzy before, but just looking like he was ready to give up. And I really feel that way. I really feel like Deontay wasn't there, but I still feel like he still had that capability to land that looping right and get right back into the fight, because that's all I'm looking for, and he couldn't land it. And it was to me, and I hope Deontay Wilder hears me, it looked like the easy way out was to give up and to say the right thing. Ryan, I think more or less he was like he wanted to go out on his shield. He had to talk to the cameras. He had to talk to the reporter. He had to say the right thing, not to lose fans or perspective. But he was done, and by him coming out saying that, it was the wear and the stuff that he put on, that hurt to me even more. So
right.
Deontay Wilder's going to have to do a lot to get into the next fight.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back and you watch the fight, Ty, right, and I know you watched it, but I'm saying if you go back and watch this fight, you're a casual fan, on, like, Fury was just laying on him in the corner, and the only time he got any reprieve was when the ref is basically backing him up for a half a second, and then Fury just basically bulldozes him right back into the corner and starts working on him again. But we do have a caller calling in from the 770. Caller, you are on with the Caller's Cookout. How you doing tonight?
What's going on? Breaking news, Brian Hughes and Ty Timeless. How y'all doing tonight?
Doing fantastic, Matt. Hey, we're talking about Wilder versus Fury. You know, obviously there is a whole lot to dive into with this, but right now we're just talking about your overall arching thoughts of the fight, and then also, do you feel like the trainer threw the towel in too soon?
Yeah, I watched the fight. You know, it was a great build-up. It was pretty much a one-dimensional fight. Tyson pretty much, you know, technically worked Wilder into that. I don't believe that the towel was thrown too soon. I think it was the right decision, but I do feel like Wilder should get some say in it, which, you know, he should have probably told him, you know, when they were in the previous break that, you know, he was done or whatever. It should be his terms, but I don't think it was too soon. Your thoughts?
No, I agree with you. I mean, I actually said that I thought that the fight could have got stopped the previous round, or maybe even two. Like, I just thought he was taking too much abuse. He stopped throwing punches in my mind, like, after round three when he got clocked by that punch that, you know, basically earshot him. And in my mind, and you tell me if I'm wrong, guys, but I basically watched a fight where Fury was just basically tracking Wilder down, and the only thing Wilder was throwing was just a jab to try and keep him off of him. What's your thoughts, Ty?
I mean, that's the best thing that he could do is to keep the jab, to keep him away from him, but still yet, the crazier part is Tyson Fury has the longer reach, so he's going to be able to get to him, and it's not like Deontay's able to stay out there forever, but I think the fight was stopped in the seventh. There was a portion in the fifth round where the trainer was trying
Correct.
To pull the mouthpiece out of his mouth, and the ref was looking at him like they were about to stop, and Deontay kept going. So I really feel like he had that energy to give up, and I don't think he had a way to figure it out. And I truly, and it's kind of like people find the fountain of the youth or find the fruit, you know, the fruit of life or something, because it's like Tyson Fury went to the right gym and not his usual trainer. But he went to Kronk Gym in Detroit and found one of the Kronk brothers, and that put him over the top. And they basically tell them to throw their stuff and basically land on the guy to kind of, like, wear the guy down. And every time you seen a clinch, it was Deontay Wilder underneath his arm or being the guy underneath trying to hold up a 275-pound, 6'9" boxer. You're going to get tired, let alone you're throwing punches. That was a recipe for disaster. Brought to him by Tyson Fury. Incredible job And it's more than just what people are thinking. Oh, Tyson won the fight. Tyson did more than just won that fight. He was so technical and taking Deontay Wilder apart. And more or less, the one thing that I like what Floyd Mayweather would do is take your strong point away from you, or just like Bill Belichick would do, take your strong point away from you. So, like Floyd did to Manny Pacquiao. Manny Pacquiao couldn't throw that heavy bomb. He was looking at him in the middle of the ring like, what do I do with him, and couldn't do anything. So now you have Tyson Fury taking away the long bomb of a looping right hand, which is an 83-inch right. Like, who can't see that coming, you know, unless they're lazy enough to defend it, or lazy enough not to defend it or not get out the way. So it worked for Tyson Fury to a T.
Well, I'll tell you guys, like I said, and I said this earlier, Matt, and I'll let you respond to this before we kind of move on to the second part of this discussion on this fight. And this is, you know, everybody's talking about the technical prowess and the tracking him down that Fury did and the unbelievable jab. I'm not discounting any of those, but I really felt like the difference in this fight was the work that Fury did to the body. Matter of fact, one of the knockdowns was a body shot. And I feel like those body shots, you know, they always talk about body shots, you know, paying dividends later on. I really feel those body shots really zapped the power and the strength and the energy of Wilder. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I tend to agree. He really, really got taxed as the fight wore on with those body shots. You know, he just was never really in it. He could never get comfortable. He was backing up. Tyson was the aggressor. Give Tyson all the credit. I was fortunate enough to kind of see that one coming. I picked Tyson on my little podcast that I do on Facebook, and also had some people decide to go against me by taking Wilder. So I was kind of on cloud nine after the fight. I thought that was pretty funny when he was singing American Pie. I think he's a pretty good entertainer. I also hear that he gives most of his prize money to the homeless. So you gotta like a guy like that. So I don't know what do you guys think about Tyson?
Yeah, no, you know what? That's true. Actually, TB Timeless is the one that told me that the first fight Fury got approximately $9 million and donated the entire purse to veterans. You know, the homeless veterans and, you know, things like that. And it's like, you know, I mean, that's literally the people's champ. I mean, that's the kind of guy. We haven't had a guy like that, right? A genuinely good guy that you want to be behind, that you want to cheer for, that's also skilled. Since, I mean, you could make the argument, but I'd say since Evander Holyfield. I mean, there have been other skilled guys, you know, yeah, the Klitschko boys and this and that. But I'm saying a guy that you just genuinely, you're like, yeah, he's skilled. But this is a guy that I genuinely would just like to hang out with. That was Evander Holyfield. And, you know, there's been guys before him, obviously. But I'm just saying that's how long it's been, guys, since the heavyweight division has had, you know, a guy that's not just a face of the sport based on their skill and prowess in the ring, but also because they're genuinely likable. Like you said about, you know, singing the song and the charitable work that he does. But now it's time to talk a little bit about the ugly side of this match, Ty. So the day after the fight came out, basically, and I'm summarizing here a little bit, folks, so I apologize if I misword something, but basically Wilder came out and said, listen, I don't want to take anything away from Fury's victory, but, which we all know means you can basically erase everything before the but he said, the costume I was wearing weighed approximately 40 pounds, and I really feel like it zapped my energy before the fight. I feel like that really made the difference. Ty, what's your thoughts on this? Even if this is true, is this not a bad look for him?
Okay, I want to go off of it being true, which I highly doubt, right? Let me just go off of it being true, right? Who in the world would wear something 40 pounds heavier in any sporting event? NBA, NFL, hockey, golf, NASCAR, even NASCAR, damn it. Like, who's wearing 40 pounds of anything before a fight? Like, I can see Tyson Fury wearing a crown and being carted in by women, you know what I'm like? Like, that's understandable. Who is wearing a 40-pound outfit. The helmet looked crazy. Like, I mean, it was a hot outfit. Like, don't get me wrong, it looked sick, but like 40 pounds, there's no way. Scratch that and come out and go do what you need to do. If that's what you're going to put it on, you need to come out there damn near naked and fight and wait for your shorts to be in a damn ring and fight. Like, there's no way that you could try and use that as an excuse. And it's more or less the reason why you were a lowly paid boxer until you took out, well, you had a tie with Tyson Fury.
Yeah, and you know what, guys, real quickly, breaking news in the 76ers and Cavaliers game tonight, Joel Embiid left the game with what's being called a severe shoulder injury. Let's hope that nothing too severe with his shoulder. We're hoping he doesn't miss any time, but I did want to go ahead and point that out. Matt, what's your thoughts on what Ty mentioned, the whole costume thing? Is this a bad look, and do you think it's viable that the costume is what caused the difference in this fight?
Yeah, I can't buy into that. I'm pretty sure all three of us probably worn some sort of weights before, maybe when we were training for a sport in high school. And, I mean, it's just like 40 pounds is just not enough weight to make an impact. I mean, that's a big, strong guy. These are heavyweights. You know, I don't know why he said it. I don't think that's, you know, what you want to put out there. I do think he will get another chance. I think he exercised some clause where they have to fight a third time. So hopefully he'll get better and not make excuses like that, and we will have another big fight to watch between the two of them.
Here's my question. I'm going to ask this to you guys because I do have a thought on this, but I want to get your perspective. And, Matt, I'm going to let you lead off on this. So Deontay Wilder actually came into this fight 20 pounds heavier than he was in the previous fight. Now, I know what he's saying about the costume and this and that. Do you believe there's any truth to the overall arching hypothesis that maybe perhaps he's relying way too much on the power and maybe did not train as hard for this fight as he should have?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of truth to that. I think we've definitely seen a better, sharper Wilder before, and we will definitely see a sharper Wilder in the future. But you really got to tip your cap to Tyson because, I mean, I think they were trying to say that he had too much weight. Somebody was trying to say that he had too much weight, and that it would be his downfall. Well, it turned out it was his blessing, and I think Wilder should have probably trained a little bit harder, and I think we'll see a better effort next time.
Ty, what's your thoughts? Same question. What's your thoughts on the weight having a bigger impact on that fight than the costume and training? And do you think we'll see a different Wilder in the three-peat, or is this just a matter of a bad matchup for Wilder versus Fury?
Like I said previously about the costume, he looks hilarious. It's a joke now about him trying to use that. But the Tyson Fury situation, I thought it would be bad for him to come into that fight overweight, but then I didn't know who he had in his corner. So he has the corner, and like I said, they basically get them to throw their shot, whether it's a jab or a straight right or a good hook. If you miss, it's okay. Just land on the guy and make him have to use his strength. He's doing more than fighting. He's actually lifting weights. So if you think about it, every time Tyson Fury lands on him, it's over 200 pounds on the neck or on top of the arms of Deontay Wilder that has to hold him up. If he doesn't hold him up, then Tyson Fury's going to be able to wail on him. So he has to not only, like, hold him, he has to protect himself. And that's a lot to worry about. And Deontay Wilder's not worried or thinking about that along those lines. And it worked beautifully for Tyson Fury, and nobody really paid attention to it, but you have to think about it. Before Tyson Fury, it was Klitschko. Before Klitschko, it was Lennox Lewis. They all had to clock them, and it worked to a T. These guys dominated the heavyweight division using those same tactics.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, I do agree with Matt. I do think that the third fight, with basically his reputation you know, his entire reputation and in my opinion, really his career kind of on the line. Like, you know, like you said, Ty, I mean, you're talking about a guy that was 30+, 35-0, and nobody was really watching this dude fight. Like, he was making chump change as a champion. And I really hate to see this dude go back to making chump change because he has another poor showing versus Fury. But from what I saw and the stylistically what I saw, I saw a boxer and I saw a puncher. And that's usually a really bad combination. Like we've talked about before, you know, Floyd Money Mayweather made a career out of making punchers look bad. I mean, he fought 50 times professionally, and I think we could all agree that at least 45 of those times he was the smaller guy. He did not hit as hard as the guy that was across from him, but by the end of the fight, he clearly was the stronger, the fresher, and the fighter hitting harder. And that is, you know, a death by a thousand paper cuts, if you will. But I think when you're talking about a guy like Fury, that's 6'9", that size, and especially, like you said, Ty, the way he leans on him, I think if he came in any lighter, like let's say he cuts 20 or 30 pounds so that he can be fresher and have better stamina, I don't know necessarily that that's going to make a big difference. If anything, it might make things worse for him. So I don't know. I feel like stylistically this is just a bad matchup for Wilder, which is really unfortunate because, I mean, you're talking about a dude that's fought 44 times, has 43 wins, and 42 of them are by way of knockout. I mean, just by resume alone, guys, now we could all talk about how watered down the heavyweight division is and this and that, but you're talking about one of the guys you would list as, hey, potentially one of the 20 greatest heavyweights record-wise. I'm not going to put him in the, you know, category with Muhammad Ali in that, but I'm saying just based off of record and performance, the record and performance is there, but this guy, Fury, definitely going to put a thorn in his side. Matt, what's your final thought on this before we move on?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there, breaking news. I mean, there's better things ahead, hopefully, in this rivalry. You know, overall, you know, it was a great show. I'm sure we all enjoyed it. But at the end of the day, I don't know about y'all. I wanted a fight that went about 10, 11 rounds. I was looking for 10 and a half, at least, over that amount. And I wanted, actually, a couple rounds where Wilder would win. So that's what I'm hoping for in the next fight, is that Wilder actually wins some rounds, because he absolutely got crushed on this last fight, guys.
All right, so from the canvas to the hardwood, I want to talk basketball, but in particular, I want to talk about one man individually that outside the basketball world, maybe nobody's talking about, and that's Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal, the last two games, guys, has put up 50-plus points. And my question is, look, I know the guy has been an all-star. I know he was on the all-rookie team. You know, but I also know that most people in the NBA has always said, hey, look, he's the second-best player on his own team. So my question is, Ty, are we finally getting an opportunity to see what Bradley Beal is capable of? Or is he maybe potentially turned the corner in his career and developing into a completely different monster?
I want to know who told you that he's the second best player on this team. And whoever said he's the second best, I want to know who's better than him on that team. Bradley Beal is the truth. He is the one that they've been trying to get out of D.C. And the worst thing that hurts me the most about this is not only are they trying to get him out of D.C., but their head coach is Scott Brooks, the one that helped the Thunder get to the NBA Finals. And he hasn't been able to do anything, but I have to be kind of fair to him, because ever since he's gotten there, that roster has been injury riddled. I mean, ever since Dwight Howard came and gone, and John Wall has missed seasons as well due to injury. Started the season out injured, and he's out for the season too. So I feel bad for Bradley Beal, because it's like he's doing everything that he can and they're still losing. And for him to put up this type of scoring, this has been the first time somebody's done this since, rest in peace, Kobe Bean Bryant. So this is crazy that he's off of this type of tear. And he won't get recognized at the end of the season because more than likely the Wizards won't make the playoffs.
Right, and just so you know, Ty, what I was referring to is, you know, obviously up until this year, a lot of people thought, you know, Beal was kind of the Robin, if you will, to John Wall's Batman. You know, if you look at the accolades, if you look at the awards and everything else, I'm not saying, like I said, the people that study the NBA closely, but I'm just saying he seems like a different player this year. Matt, what's your thoughts on Bradley Beal?
Yeah, Bradley Beal, I believe he just came off a 50-point game. Everything seems to be flowing. You know, he is the man now in Washington. You know, do I dare put the label franchise tag on him? But, you know, Washington's in contention. And, you know, the Eastern Conference is pretty soft. But Washington is there, and Beal is the man right now for that team.
Yeah, and Ty, correct me if I'm wrong. But I want to say Bradley Beal signed a very, very team-friendly contract the last time his contract was up. I don't think they're going to be getting the hometown discount this time. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, you're right. And that's why he's been on the look to be moving. So they'll probably have to throw the White House at him for him to stay. There's nothing around him other than the potential of a blank check being given to him. So I you're right. I think they did take care of him the last time that deal came around. But this time I think he's going to try and go to be with a team that's contending.
So do you foresee like a trade deadline type move? Because my understanding is basically he would have to be on the new team by March 2nd. Now, granted, that's a few days and more than likely not going to happen. But if memory serves me correctly, Ty, you tell me if I'm wrong, but he'd have to be on the new team by March 2nd in order to be eligible to play for the playoffs, correct?
Well, I think the trade deadline is coming gone already, so he can't get traded. He's in D.C.
for the
long haul. But
well, I'm saying he could technically buy out his contract or something like that, like what happened with Iguodala, what's happened with the Morris brothers. I'm saying there is ways, but what I'm saying is you have to be on the roster before March 2nd in order to be eligible to play. Isn't that correct?
Well, yeah, but I definitely, but I don't think that'll happen in this case. I think he's more of a homebred player. I think he'll stay there for the long haul of this season and try to find his way out. I don't think he'll quit on this team at this point in time.
No, and I agree with you. I definitely don't think he's going to quit on the team. But, yeah, you know, it's funny, man, how you see some of these guys. You know, you never see Bradley Beal's name thrown around when you're talking about, you know, the top 10, top 15 players in the NBA. But, you know, like Matt was just saying, I mean, you look at his stats, guys, and the stats are eye-popping. It's not, and it's definitely not one of those situations where you're just looking at today or yesterday. You know, yeah, the 50-point games are nice, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, you're talking about a guy that basically for the last, let's just say, month has given you 30 or more points pretty much every game. I mean, that's what you're dealing with. You're dealing with a guy who at this point is basically on par with – almost on par with Harden but taking less attempts. I think that's pretty fair to say, and he's right around the NBA average at 33-34% from three, you know, and he's a career 38% shooter from three. So I mean, you're talking about a hell of a player. But I do want to heat this kitchen up a little bit, Ty. You know, I'm a Lakers fan. I know you're a Thunders fan, and me and you kind of got into a discussion the other day, and I'm glad that. Matt's here, but before we move off this, I do want to bring in, we do have another caller calling in from the 404. Let me give them an opportunity to jump into the kitchen here with us. Caller from the 404, how you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm good. What up, Ty?
Hello, Nas. How are you?
Is this our boy, Nas?
You know how it is, man. Of course, man. You know I got to creep in every once in a while, see what's going on.
Hey, man, well, we appreciate you stopping by, Nas. We talked a little bit about the Wilder Fury fight, about the stoppage by the trainer. Did you think it was a little early or not? we talked about the costume or quote unquote equipment, how heavy it was, and just stylistically the matchup. And then we talked a little bit about Bradley Beal, a guy that, you know, if he's playing in any major market, I think you can make the case he might be a top 10 player in the NBA. But what's your thoughts on those two topics in general?
Oh, yeah. The first thing, Bradley, he signed an extension this past summer. So let me pull it up. In 2012, he signed the full max extension, 5 years, $128 million. And then this past summer, he tacked on two more years to that, to the tune of $72 million. So he's maxed out. The Wizards paid him everything that they could. Everybody thought they would trade him, but, you know, they went all in and kept him, which makes sense. And then if they do decide to trade him or whatever, they did right by him. You know, you keep the franchise moving. So we'll see. He's a solid player, all-star level talent, maybe at best all-NBA third team. Like right now he's on a really bad team, so the usage rate is so ridiculous that he's going to have 50-point nights. But, I mean, hell, he's playing by himself. Rough situation. But, yeah, he's really talented, always loved him. If you put him on any contender, it would kind of tip them over right now, over the top, as far as adding a piece. So, love Bradley Beal. As far as the fight situation, look, man, when you're a limited fighter who has a special skill in, you know, the punching power of Deontay Wilder, if somebody forces you to do things you're not good at, you're going to have trouble. So, salute to Fury and his team for deciding they were going to come forward the whole fight, make Wilder fight on his heels, and actually take away, you know, his one strength, that punching power. So, yeah, that was a beatdown. The corner stopped it at a good time. They were correct. The fighter always doesn't want you to stop it, but the corner has to think about the future. That was a good stoppage. He was done. But as far as that costume thing, I think people are mistaken what he's saying. I think people are taking that as him saying, oh, I had the costume on, that's why I got beat. But I think people don't understand how ridiculous you have to be to sign up to get punched in the face. So when you're a boxer, you have to carry a certain amount of confidence and invincibility as far as your psyche. So for him to continue being Deontay Wilder, he has to tell himself, no, see, it was the uniform or the costume that kind of messed me up. And if it wasn't for that, man, I'd knock that dude out. Yeah, let's sign up again. Like, that's the kind of mentality you have to have to be a boxer. So I can see where he's coming up with these different ideas to make it make sense for
him. Nah, I got to ask you a question real quick, man.
But hold on, let me tie it.
I got to ask you a question.
Right.
Hold on, one second. Real quick.
Okay,
go ahead.
You remember Pacquiao saying his shoulder was hurt after the Mayweather fight? You see what I'm saying?
Yes,
it wasn't because Pacquiao was making excuses. It's just in him, like, he could not, you know, just take it on faith. Like, I lost to this guy. No, it had to be the shoulder. Like, this is what boxing is.
Right, but how do you
go ahead,
how do you go back and watch that tape, right? Because obviously he's going to watch it at some point. How do you go back and watch that tape and say to yourself, I was in that fight, all I had to do was this?
Oh, see, that's where the costume comes in. See, if I didn't have that costume, I'd have my legs, and I wouldn't have allowed him to bully me around you know, so, I mean, for a boxer, these kind of excuses make sense. But if you're a fan and you watch that fight, you know he got walked down and he didn't have an answer for it. And the biggest thing in the fight was Tyson Fury deciding, every time he gets close to me, I'm going to tie him up, and it's going to be a little dirty boxing, a little rabbit punching, like I'm going to beat him up, I'm going to behave like a fighter and see if he can handle it. And Deontay couldn't, man. That was an expert game plan worked out to perfection.
Do you foresee, even if, let's say, Wilder, you know, puts in some extra time in the gym, you know, maybe he works a little bit more on his actual boxing. I mean, let's keep it real. This fight's probably going to happen by the end of the year, 8-9 months. Do you see this fight going in any different than what we just saw the other night on Saturday?
The only way it goes differently is if Wilder makes the commitment to, I'm not going to allow him to come forward the whole fight, because Wilder can't fight on his heels. He's not skilled enough. He got into boxing late. There are certain fundamental things he's just not going to get good at anytime soon, man. Like, late-stage boxers typically have flaws, and he's got a lot of them. So, just ultimately, he can't fight on his heels. So, So he's gonna have to decide how that's gonna work. But if you're Tyson Fury, man, like you gotta think about the audacity of walking down Deontay Wilder. You're taking, like, you're putting yourself at risk because at any time one of those crazy shots can get in there. So I don't think Wilder was ready for Tyson to just be that aggressive, like walking forward the whole fight. No, I'm not running from your right hand. I'm actually in your face. I'm chasing you. So I don't know, man. That's a rough one. It could end the same way of the fight we just saw.
So let me ask you guys a question. So I was talking to Ty the other day, and we kind of got into a debate, if you will, about the best all around basketball player right now in the NBA. Not talking about supporting cast. Not talking about, you know, whether they're 21 or they're 35, the best all-around basketball player right now, and Timeless, who did you say that player was?
Christopher Paul.
Who?
Bias Thunder fan, huh? Bias Thunder fan.
I'm just joking. Hey, I got to. Nas, what up, though? I gotta do that. So he's gonna throw this narrative out about LeBron, right? And look. I'm not taking anything away from LeBron, but I want him to put the dish out so I can address this the proper way.
I'll ask you, is who's the best player in the NBA?
Christopher Paul.
No, it's Giannis. No question. It's Giannis.
Wait till we send the dish up. No. I want to send the dish up. Wait, not chill. Nas, please stay in your seat. You're usual at the cafe. I need you to stay in your seat, please, sir. Please stay in your seat. I need him to set the dish up so we can address this the proper way.
Go ahead, set it up, Ty.
No, this is your cooking today. Please.
He also said Giannis, and I said I disagree. So we got into talking a little bit about it. He disagreed with me. He said, okay, well, it's not Giannis, it's gotta be Kawhi. And I said, no, it's not Kawhi. And in my opinion, and I want to get your boys' opinion, I can't put the best NBA player at a time in the NBA. You may love Jordan, you may love Kobe, you may love Wilt or Larry Bird. Nobody is going to say that there is ever a time period in the NBA where there is more talent, more skill, more speed, more everything than there is right now. Athleticism, everything. How can you be the best player in the NBA and cannot shoot free throws? How can you be the best player in the NBA and not shoot even league average from the three-point line? How can you be the best player in the NBA if you only going to play half the regular season? So I'm going to start
Wait, you're a Laker fan. You seen Shaq do it from 2000, 2001 to 2002. He was the best player in the league.
No. I didn't think Shaq was the best player in the league.
He was.
Ty, anytime you can hack a Shaq, if you will, or hack a Giannis, anytime you can implement a strategy that basically just completely takes a player out of the game, they're not the best player. There's a reason why Ben Simmons is a good player, not a great player.
Wait, hold on. So, watch this. Nas, who was the best player in 2000? Wait, Nas. In 2000, 2001, and 2002, who was the best player in the NBA?
Yeah, it was Shaq. And I get his point about saying that there are certain weaknesses. There's going to be weaknesses with everybody. The problem is when you're talking about certain players, their strengths overwhelm those small weaknesses so much that it doesn't matter. So you say, okay, Giannis can't shoot free throws, so we foul him. Okay, that means now they're in the bonus early, and they're going to have a parade to the free throw line for the rest of the team for the rest of that quarter. It also means your big men are probably in foul trouble, and Giannis can now drive with impunity. So, the same thing with Shaq. Like, if you remember that Dwayne Wade famous finals in Miami, people forget that the Dallas Mavericks were fouling Shaq that series, And that's why Dwayne Wade got that parade of free throws. So no, there's weaknesses to everything.
Yeah, no. And I'm not disagreeing with you, but I think the same way that you can bring up that argument, we can also bring up the argument that the reason why the Giannis and the Bucks didn't make it further than they did in the playoffs is because of his inadequacies at the free throw line.
Well, I would blame Eric Bledsoe. Honestly, I wouldn't have let him on the plane
okay,
if I was
yeah.
that team.
That's a whole nother.
That's just me.
that's definitely. You know what? That's a good point. That's a whole nother topic for a whole nother time. But so anyway, what I was getting at here is, look, I know everybody calls LeBron James Father Time and this and that, and you know whether you want to say he's the greatest or the fifth best or the 12th best player or whatever. If you look at every aspect of his game, and I'll give you free throws because he's only a 70-something percent free throw shooter, every aspect of his game, he's an elite player. Even at his age, he plays 30-plus minutes, and he's playing damn near every game. The problem I have with Kawhi, I don't think it'd even be an argument that Kawhi is the best player in the NBA. He's a phenomenal defender. He can score at will, but he's on this load management thing where he plays about 50 games, 60 games throughout the entire season. And I just don't know how you look at that and say that that's the best the NBA has. None of the other best players in the NBA do that.
Well, I mean, put it like this. I love Kawhi. I think he's a great player. I just think Giannis is better. He just can do more. That size problem is such a matchup nightmare that you really just – there's no real way to deal with it. But as far as Kawhi, if you want to extend a guy who's injury-prone's career, you have to make adjustments. So I think teams have just kind of bought in and said, look, we want to have 5 years of Kawhi at this level as opposed to trying to get him to go out there every night and we end up with a Penny Hardaway situation. So I got no problem with load management. I want to see him load manage. I want to see Porzingis load manage. Like certain players, man, I'd rather watch the rest of their career, even if it means they got to miss some games. Because certain guys, their bodies will not handle 82.
So, Matt, I'm going to come over to you. The rest of the guys, we've already kind of spoke up, and then I want to give Ty an opportunity. Matt, what's your thoughts? Who, in your opinion, there's no wrong answer, unless you don't pick my answer, but who is the best player in the NBA?
I like that.
I got to go with the obvious choice, guys, and that's Mr. LJ23, LeBron James. So, you know, at the end of the day, he might not be clutch, but he's putting up those nasty numbers where he is the best overall scorer. He can rebound. You know, his defense is decent. So all around, I'm going to endorse LeBron James, and until someone proves otherwise, I'm going to stick with him.
CP Timeless, I'm coming over to you. We got one Giannis. We got two LeBron. What's your thoughts?
Well, you know how I feel, so it's either or. I'll go through both of the players that I'll talk to you about. I'll go first with Giannis. For Giannis to be at this clip right now, and we're basically in March. I want to say the beginning of March, even though we're 3 days away from the end of February. But we're in March. He has Milwaukee, the Bucks, with single-digit losses, right? And this is just offense and defense. He can block shots. He can take over a game offensively, whether if he's shooting a three or not, even though he's not the best three-point shooter, but he's shooting the three better now, and he has confidence in it. And a good thing that he's been working with Korver, that you do have to respect the three-point shooting, even though it's not your, you know, your James Harden's or your Steph Curry's. You're not seeing him shoot the three ball at a clip like that. But for him to get 30 points and 15 rebounds when he wants, that's ridiculous. That's a ridiculous stat that he was doing game in and game out, and they're winning. I can see if he was being selfish and trying to do it and getting it done, but they're winning games, even though the Eastern Conference is totally whack, and Nas already know how I feel about the Eastern Conference. So still do, man. I can't stand the Eastern Conference because of how weak it is. But he's doing it in that Eastern Conference and making hay against Western Conference team too. So it's not like they can dodge it. Now, me looking at Kawhi's situation, this guy was man enough, and I can't believe that I'm saying it like this. He was man enough to want to leave the Spurs organization, even though he was hurt and everybody, you know, going back and forth about him and Pop, and him and Pop had their little storm going on or whatever. He left, went to Toronto, took over a whole country, wins the championship and said, I want to go back home. And now it's a situation where they have to get him and Paul George to meet a medium, like when these guys can be on the floor and play together, because right now the Lakers have been beating them and across the board. I'm about to paralyze everybody's, you know, comments toward LeBron David. Mm-hmm. I'm not taking anything away from LeBron. But this is the crazy part. LeBron plays in a system where he has a 7'3" a 7'3" center. He has a power forward that's 6'11". He's a big house himself. And then they bring in a guy that's 6'11" that they are using as a bench center. And this guy was an all-star, being Dwight Howard. He could easily come across half court each quarter and get 3 assists by alley-oop. Like that's easy. He's already 6'8", 270. He's supposed to get you 6 to 8 rebounds. He's supposed to. And, of course, you're not going to be able to stop LeBron from getting to the rim at least 8 to 10 times. That's 20 points. He can average a triple-double if he wanted to. If he really implied himself, it can happen. But I hold a lot against LeBron in big shot quality in games, and he doesn't defend the best player all the time, even though sometimes he tries, but he'll be baked if he's the right player. Those things happen. Kawhi wants to take on the responsibility on taking on the toughest player. He'll go out and score. He'll shoot threes. He's actually attacking the rim more than I've ever seen him do that now. He's getting to the rim when he wants to, and he's already doing this at a pace where they're trying to save him for the long haul in the postseason and not right now. LeBron and them are doing a lot of this heavy lifting right now in the regular season. The Lakers didn't make the postseason last year. We have not seen Anthony Davis get past, the second round in the playoffs. A lot of these people are in new waters being in that Lakers organization. So right now, it's cool. It's easy to eat this dish right now, but we'll see when the heat is on, when April, May, and June come around.
So the only issue that I have with your statement is if your caveat is that you're not sold on LeBron because his supporting cast doesn't have playoff experience, how can you be so sure about Giannis and the Bucks?
I said the supporting cast is helping him right now, like for how easy the game is. Anthony Davis is probably should be more the MVP for LeBron instead of LeBron on that team right now. If Anthony Davis wasn't on that Lakers team, they'd be hit. They'd be in a lot of trouble right now.
No doubt. Anthony Davis is probably the best big man in the game. I don't think anybody would argue that, whether you want to put him center, power forward. I mean, he's a phenomenal player, for sure. But
Remove all three players. Wait. Let's do it like this. Let's do it like this. Remove all three players from each team. Remove Giannis, remove Kawhi, and remove LeBron from each team with how they're constructed now. Whose teams would stay afloat and who would fall?
Well, obviously the Clippers are still going to stay afloat. They've got probably the best supporting cast of the three. They got Paul George. As well.
Paul George has missed 20-something games. Paul George hasn't even been there. Paul George has been hurt.
And the Bucks play in a horrific – hold on. And the Bucks play in a horrible Eastern Conference that you even said yourself, we're probably going to have two or three teams that get in with a sub-500 record. And they got Middleton on that team. It's not a bad player. So I think it's a moot argument. I think all of them would be fine.
Throw it around the kitchen. See how they feel. See how Nas and Matt feel if you were to remove the three from each team.
Nas, you heard the question posed by Ty. What's your thoughts? Who's the bigger loss, if you will, on the team? Whose team is able to suffer the loss of their superstar more? The Lakers with LeBron, the Clippers with Kawhi, or the Bucks with Giannis?
All right.
Do you have Nas?
Nas, you there? All right, he might have stepped away for a moment. Let me throw this over to Matt. Matt, same question. Who do you think is the bigger loss to their team if they miss, and which team is able to stay afloat better, and why?
I'll tell you, it's tough. Believe it or not, I think I'll just do this by the process of elimination. I think the Lakers would still be a decent club without LeBron. You got Davis down low. You got Green out in the wing. You got Kuzma. You got a good all-around team for the Lakers. I would say the team that needs their player most is the Milwaukee Bucks. They need Giannis. They've got to have him. Everything's ran through him. I mean, he's, one of the most up-and-coming players. So I would say Milwaukee needs their star the most. The Lakers need their star the least. The Clippers, it's kind of a hit or miss. I think they need Leonard pretty bad, but then some nights, he's not there. So I still gotta stand by my Milwaukee pick. Brian, your thoughts?
Yeah, like I said, I think it hurts Milwaukee a lot. I'm not saying that Giannis doesn't mean more to that team, but here's the problem I have. They play in the East. They play against superior. They play against inferior competition. I could make the argument that they would be the fifth best team if they were in the West. So that once again, it's never actually going to materialize. But I'm just saying, if you look at the teams that are in the Western Conference, there is some really, really good talented teams. Let's try and throw this back over to Nas. Nas, we're talking about Lakers with LeBron, Kawhi with the Clippers, and Giannis with the Bucks. If one of those stars were to go down, which team do you think would be able to kind of continue to carry on without, and which one means the most to their organization? Fortunately, guys, I think he may have stepped away, so we'll keep his mic open in case he wants to come back. Ty, I'm going to give you kind of the final thought here because we still got some baseball topics that I think are pretty good that I wanted to talk about. And we'll definitely jump back into this if Knox comes back. But your final thoughts, I know how you feel about Giannis. And like I said, I'm not saying you're wrong. I just, my own personal pet peeve. If it was a baseball terminology, I need a five-tool player. So what's your final thoughts here before we move on?
See, and that's the way I'm looking at it. The 5-2 player to me would be Kawhi out of all of them, because Kawhi plays better defense than both of them. But
I agree. Giannis
right now.
Giannis durability.
Well, I think the durability is more or less a situation that they're looking at from 2 years ago. I don't think they're looking at it from what he did last year, because he won a championship last year and they didn't load manage him as much as they did this year. I think they're being specific to him because what he's done as of the past season coming into this season. But by any means, and in looking at the situation that you painted with Paul George, like I said, Paul George has missed over 20 games this season. And they do have a good supporting cast, but Lou Williams hasn't played like he usually played in, I want to say, the past 3 to 4 years off of that bench. And Patrick Beverley's been injured. They've been missing a lot of pieces on that Clipper team. It's good on paper, but they have their question mark there as well. And they are the talk of the NBA right now on how they're dealing with injury right now. So the Clippers would suffer without Kawhi Leonard. So I think it is a toss-up between Kawhi or Giannis right now, but I don't care what nobody says. Christopher Paul for president. I don't care. The way this boy is playing right now, Christopher Paul. But no, you guys have to watch some Thunder basketball. But no, I don't want to take nothing away from LeBron, though. I mean, LeBron is an awesome player. Top five all time, probably. Like, and that's debatable. I love that discussion. If not top five, definitely top 10. But right now, it's easy basketball for him. Every time LeBron has been successful, he's been loaded. Twice in Miami, he was loaded. He got to Cleveland. He damn near had 8 to 10 all-star teams on that all-star players on that team. So, and right now, he has nothing but trees in Los Angeles. He's probably in the Redwood Forest somewhere in California. So It's been helpful for him. And kind of like it, and God rest his soul, the Kobe Bryant situation. Kobe was successful with Shaq around him. Then once Shaq left, they were in the cellar. They couldn't make the playoffs. Once he got Powell and Bynum to start working, they were championship relevant again. So this is what happens in a Laker uniform. They need those pieces around to make everybody look bright in that sunshine jersey.
All right, boys. Well, we're going to move on now to baseball, the MLB. As you guys know, spring training games are going on right now. A lot of teams have had – a lot of players, excuse me, have had a lot to say about the Astros and their cheating scandal. And we're going to get into that in a moment. I wanted to give you guys a little bit of primer. But first, I want to talk about home runs. Everybody should be aware at this point, the 2019 Twins set the record for the most home runs in a single season with 307. But what I think is kind of an interesting side note here is before 2018, because the record did get broken back-to-back years, but before 2018, the record stood for 21 years at 264. In 2018, the Yankees hit 267. So you're like, all right. Last year, four teams broke the record that the Yankees had set in 2018 that had stood for 21 years. The Dodgers hit 279. The Astros hit 288. The Yankees hit 306. And the Twins hit 307. So, Ty, I'm going to come to you first. Over under, do you think the record's going to be broke again this year? And what's the deal? Do they need to change the baseball? What's going on with the baseball?
Wait, what team hit 307 home runs?
The Twins.
Where do they play?
The Twinks.
Oh, they're a Triple-A affiliate for the Yankees. Once they get their talent up and they're real good, the Yankees will sign them.
I'm just asking questions. I just want to know where they play at before I start answering questions.
Minnesota. The Minnesota Twins.
Why do people get mad when the dish is in favor for me? Like, why can't I enjoy this? Like, please let me enjoy this.
Enjoy away, man.
It's tough to say because there's a lot of big batters nowadays. It's not like you have like, you know, I'm an 80s baby, so I can't front. But, you know, you're used to the era where it's like two good batters on a team that could get you like 30, maybe 40 home runs, or one batter that could get higher than 40, and then everybody fizzles out, get your 7, your 13s here. And then the number of, you know, round out somewhere in the high hunts, I mean, you know, the high 90s, maybe the hundreds. So on and so forth. We're not, you know, usually used to seeing numbers of home runs hit at this clip. But now looking at some of these teams being as loaded, and I have to take it to my dish, and looking at Minnesota, everything was there last year, and they added a gun. And I thank Matt so much. I thank Peachtree's finest, both of these Atlanta boys. I thank you so much for sending Joshua to the state of Minnesota, because now they got Josh Donaldson in the midst of that offense. And it's like, I don't want to be biased, but I kind of have to be biased. If he comes in and fits like a glove, this number could get blown out of the water, let alone the one thing that I was mad at with Rocco Baldelli is they were kind of low, and I hate to say it, but they were kind of low managing Max Kepler, and Max Kepler was leading the league at home runs at one point. So it's like that number could have got blown out of the water, but they were trying to be safe and save him for the postseason and trying to do all the precautionary measures. But I think that number can be threatened, but, you know, one, health is a big issue. Everybody has to be available throughout the entirety of the season. And there will be no more, like, sign stealing and things of that nature, so it'll make it tougher for the Astros or teams like that that have been using devices to win. So I don't know. I think it can be threatened. I think that record can be broken this season. But that's a high number. 306, 307, those are both ridiculous numbers.
Well, here's the other thing to consider. So the Twins had, for the first time, it was a record, 8 different Twins reached at least 20 home runs
Nelson Cruz had 41. Kepler had 36. Sanyo had 34. Rosario had 32. Garver had 31. CJ Krohn had 25. Schaap had 23. And Polanco had 22. Now, as you know, Ty, Krohn and Schaap are both gone. Now, I know you replaced them with Donaldson, who's probably a lock for 30. But do you anticipate the Twins hitting, would you say plus or minus 307?
I gotta say it like this. I got you, Nas. I try to take care of you. I got you. I gotta be biased and say yes. The one thing about it is Scope had a good season. Scope hit, I think, over 20, if I'm not mistaken, but he barely got to it. Like, he hit a lot of those home runs in the early portion of the season. He fizzled out at the tail end. I think Donaldson, let me just be fair. Let me just say Donaldson hits the same 20, but he's going to add more. Like, and I'm trying to be fair to that. I think that they can do it. This is the part that I like about the Twins right now, and I thank God that this happened. The Twins are in the same situation that the Yankees, when they were at their best, they're at right now. You can't pitch around anybody right now. They can't pitch around anybody. They can't want to walk. They can't want to walk anybody and face another batter. So this is what works for the Twins right now. And, of course, you know, you get somebody to pop up, ground out, or strike out. That's the name of the game. But right now, you got Nelson Cruz, who's back in the full swing of things. You got Miguel Sano feeling himself. Kepler's hitting the ball. Josh Donaldson. Like, this team is loaded. The one guy that won't hit a bomb, but he's a good hitter, is Luis Urias, and he's a rookie and just made a name for himself in a year. And they were ready to send Scope off, and Scope went to, I think, Chicago or Detroit, if I'm not mistaken, him and Krohn. So we'll see how it works out. But I definitely am going to throw my bias in there. I think it can be threatened. I want to see the Twins eclipse it with this type of team that they have now.
All right, Nas, I'm going to come back to you. I know you didn't get an opportunity to really kind of put in your point of view on the last NBA topic. So Ty basically said, hey, listen, you know, if you take LeBron off the Lakers, you know, essentially they're still a really good team, probably make the playoffs. And I made the argument, well, whether you remove – you know, Kawhi from the Clippers because of that supporting cast and Paul George, or Giannis from the Bucks because of how weak the East is, I said, I think all these teams are still playoff teams, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to respond to that. What's your thoughts on that? And then, you know, you can close up the NBA and then talk about, you know, baseball and the home runs if you'd like.
Yeah, well, I'll just say basketball is always the king of the hill type of situation. And it gets passed over slowly. Typically, a guy rules for a good 5 to 8 years. And LeBron had his run as the guy. He's the guy who surpassed Kobe. In the prime of Kobe's career, LeBron took over and was a better player. And he's held that title for a long time. And now, at his advanced age, I don't even think it's unreasonable people to say that Giannis is better than him and that some of these other guys are better than him, because you're talking about him right now at this stage. 36
right.
years old, all of those playoff minutes and everything else. And as far as taking a guy away from a team, that doesn't really tell us anything, because these teams were constructed around that particular player. So you pull that piece out and then say, oh, well, they're still good or they're still bad. Well, that's more about roster construction than it is anything else. But, yeah, I'm still saying Giannis, even though LeBron is an all-time great, those other guys are working their way to become all-time great. And, you know, top Hall of Fame guys. They're still on the road to get there. Bron's already there. He's just adding on accolades. As far as baseball with the Twins, no, I think anytime you set a record like that, it's always best to bet the under. Like, yeah, I don't think they'll do it again. And if we're being honest about that Minnesota team, they feasted on bad pitching. They'd have nights where it's 15 runs, 12 runs, or whatever against a bad pitcher. And then next few days don't show up, and then they go on another streak and another streak and another streak. And I think you'll see a lot of that next year. So, yeah, great hitters, and maybe we're playing with a juice ball now. I don't know. A lot of people say there's a juice ball. Verlander seems to believe so. So, I mean, how
cute
but
Verlander was getting slapped
now
for
anyway.
Real. Verlander was getting slapped for real in the postseason, though. So,
yeah. Well, listen,
yeah,
the reason
why guys who with no pop hit 20 home runs. Like, we were seeing guys, like,
yeah.
I mean, come on, man. We were seeing stuff last year offensively.
Well, and the reason why I brought it up, Knox, the reason why, and I agree with you, typically in those type of moment, you know, those type of situations, you always bet the under, right? You know, you just broke the record. But the thing that I found unusual was, so the record was set in 1997 by Seattle at 264. And that record stood for 21 years until 2018 when the Yankees broke it at 267. But here's the crazy thing. Four teams last year, the Dodgers at 279, the Astros at 288, the Yankees at 306, and the Twins at 307, all broke the record from 2018. And then before that, that had stood for 21 years. So I'm just saying, in an era now where it seems to be that quote-unquote live ball that you were just talking about, to have four teams break that record and the Yankees be right there, I think it's reasonable to say, hey, it's very possible this record goes down again this year.
Yeah, possibly. I just don't think the Twins will do it. If you were to tell me that,
my God,
the Twins, I'm taking the field.
That's my new best friend right there, Ty.
Oh my goodness, yo! It don't matter. Look, Niles come for me too. Believe me, I'm used to all of it. I'm used to all of it. Everybody comes for me. It don't matter. Niles was the
hey,
same
man,
guy.
I lost a few dollars on those quiz last year, man. I haven't forgotten.
Yeah, yeah. And look, listen. Niles is the same guy that came for me in October and said, you know what? This is gonna be the year for the Thunder to rebuild. And now look at him now, right? And he's over here smiling, right? This is the same guy that said, oh, the Twins had a good 15 or 12 run game, and then they fall asleep. The Twins won 101 games. They did not fall asleep this year. These guys went crazy this year. Like,
yeah, that was cute. And then what happened?
Cute?
Yeah,
wait, 101 games? Wait, time out. 101 games is cute? Wait. 101 games is cute? That's beautiful. Listen, you in Atlanta, your boys, the Braves will take
that. Hold on. But their salary and the talent that they had on the team, winning 101 games, okay, yeah, that should be expected. Now, the flame out in the playoffs, that should not be expected. The pitching problems that are going to exist next year, that's to be said. Like, we can't
right,
talk
right.
about
no,
this
no,
like
that
this
is
some kind
lone
of great
problem.
Team.
No, wait, that is the lone problem I look at with the Twins is their pitching staff. You're saying with the
that's
money that they're giving out.
That's a pretty big problem.
Wait, hold on. The Twins don't put out a lot of money. Wait, hold on. The Twins don't put out a lot of money. Like, I don't know when you came with that discussion. The Twins don't put a lot of money out. So I think they're actually saving bucks. And the guy owns Target, and he's sitting on money. So the only thing they're looking at is their pitching issues, and they tried to fix that. They brought in two or three pitchers this year, Maeda, Hill, and Bailey. So they got three pitchers new faces and new places right here.
Are we talking about Homer Bailey as a good acquisition? Are we doing that?
It's better than what they had. Wait, hold on.
Yeah, okay.
Is it better than what they
listen,
had? They
already,
had people getting smacked out of the park.
Wait. With them about Rich Hill.
It's better than what they had, or at least a new face that hasn't even seen what it looked like to be pitching in Minnesota. So it's different. At least we get the spark somewhere. So they got to start somewhere. This is an offensive discussion. Look how they put the Twins on the whole grill. This is the whole Twins organization, and we went from the offensive part, which I feel like the offense should still be there, barring health and injuries, like health situations or injuries. If they're healthy, that number should be there. Just like Brian said, if the Yankees set the record in 2018, the next year come around, everybody shattered 267. Like, come on, the Twins may be there. The Yankees may be there. I can't really think of another team that has that strong of an offense. Maybe the Dodgers. The Dodgers would probably be one of the only teams that I feel like that could get there.
The can?
I think about the Astros. The Astros may be in trouble all season long. They're not going to get the pitches they want.
If you remember way back when, the Twins were the first cheaters that cheated in the World Series. They lifted
oh,
the Braves.
Oh, come on.
They lifted the Braves.
Oh, my goodness.
They lifted the flag off the bag. They cheated. The Braves should have won two World Series, not one, Ty. Your Twins
oh,
cheated.
Oh, my goodness. I'm dealing with two people out of Atlanta. There's a true Atlanta guy that I'm dealing with. Listen, he's taking you back to when I was a kid, when 91 came around and we took those guys out.
Listen, order in the court. Matt gets an opportunity to say his piece. So, Matt, tell me about these cheaters.
Well, if you guys remember, it was a long time ago. Kyle remembers it, but I think his name was Kent Herbeck, and he was playing first base for the Twins. In a crucial situation against my Braves, he lifted the guy's leg off the bag to tag him out on a throwover from first.
Wow.
You cannot do that. You cannot do that. I will never forget that. But anyway, that was a sideshow, a jab at Ty. But, no, I like the discussion, guys. The Twins have got a special player in Donaldson. He's really got to go for 25 dingers this year. The Twins got power. Will they break the record? That remains to be seen. The Braves are the clear-cut favorites to win the East again. They probably will represent the National League as long as they get the bullpen down pat. Fellas, your thoughts about the Atlanta Braves?
I know you're an Atlanta guy, but how do you just real quickly just dismiss the World Series champs?
Yeah, the Nationals are a special team. You know, they're very, very tough.
And look at that
pitching
staff.
The pitching
staff.
Yeah,
but they also got cheap. They got cheap this offseason.
They got cheap and got rid of a lot of players in Washington, too. They did.
Yep.
That's exactly right, guys. I think it would be very hard for the Nationals to make it back to the World Series. There's going to be a lot of teams gunning for them. As long as the Philadelphia Phillies and that Bryce Harper guy keeps messing up, I think I will enjoy the baseball season twice as much. I just think it's funny how much they pay him and how little result he actually has on that team. The Phillies are a joke. They really are a joke. The Mets are never going anywhere. They already blew it with Beltran, the infamous cheater for the Astros, the guy who orchestrated everything. And the Marlins, they are dead fish. So it's basically the Nationals and the Braves. And if those two teams, when it's all said and done, I think they control the National League. I'm not worried about the overpriced Dodgers, the guys crying about the World Series. They're a bunch of crybabies out in L.A. They're never going to win it. Kershaw's a choke. That whole franchise is a choke. The Dodgers, it doesn't matter if the Astros were cheating or not, the Dodgers would have choked. That's what I feel about the sorry-ass Dodgers. Guys, your thoughts on the Dodgers.
But, I don't know. That'd be a big deal next year. I want to see what Mookie Betts does.
I was just going to say, you know what? I'm not saying that they're not overpaid, but you know what? You can make the same argument about the Yankees. But the Dodgers, top to bottom, they're a really, really good team. I mean, when you're trying to trade away your fourth or fifth outfielder, and his name's Jock Peterson, and he's an all-star that hits 25-plus home runs every year just because you don't have room for him, you're a pretty damn good team. I mean, they're a very, very good team. Their biggest problem is, you guys tell me what your thoughts are, I think management in particular tries to get too cute in the playoffs, whether it be with Kershaw trying to have him come in, you know, to close out a game in the seventh inning, or whether it's trying to start somebody on short rest. I mean, when you have as many dominant pitchers as they have, I just think that they've gotten too cute over the years and cost themselves opportunities. But I'll give you one other name in the NL. And you know what? Every 3 years they say the Giants, they come around. I don't think it's because of the Giants. I think it's because that guy called Madison Bumgarner. Diamondbacks were pretty good last year. I think they got quite a bit better this year. The Diamondbacks could be a contender as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a possibility. Nice lineup. Last year was a disaster with the injuries. But overall, man,
yep.
I just want to add this. Like, we talk about the problems the NFL has and the problems the NBA has. Nobody has problems like baseball. You got integrity in the game project. You got people – you got people questioning if the games are not, you know what I mean, to a degree degraded because of the ball, because of what MLB wants. Then you got people cheating.
Then you got the problem of the MLB itself. The idea that fans can't watch their local team a lot of times because games are blocked out or they have to sign up to a certain service to watch their team. Like, the MLB has serious problems, along with the generational issue of younger people not watching and you having an older fan base. Like, baseball has way more issues than the other leagues have. Money's good right now, but who knows, man?
Hey, so let's keep it right there. This is going to be our last baseball topic, and I think that this is important, right? Because I can't think of another scandal quite like the Red Sox and the Astros scandal. Because I'm just saying, we've all kind of determined at this point there was clearly sign stealing, there was clearly cheated implemented at all levels, at the coaching staff level, at the player level. My question to you guys is, as a fan of the game, do you guys find it like me personally, it leaves a bitter taste in my mouth that the only people that really got punished were the coaches. The people that benefited from the cheating, the people who ended up with World Series rings and was not stripped of that title, the people that made All-Star games that benefited from this basically had no accountability whatsoever. Ty, what's your thoughts on that?
That's a real rough road. Like, that's rough. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, what do they do? They take the title away and then try to hand it to the Dodgers, and they'll feel like they didn't earn it. So it's like they have to penalize them somehow. They got rid of, you know, general management, their manager, and, you know, they got a lot of these guys confessing. I agree with you, Naj, 1,000% how tainted the sport of baseball is right now, but man, I don't know which way they go. Like they have to kind of leave it there, you know, leave it, you know how it is, and let the Astros have stolen that World Series championship in 2017. But, again, if they're leaving that put on how the Astros won their World Series, I'm sorry that I have to do this for City, but I'm going to continue to stress this. Pete Rose deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, man. Pete Rose has to be in the Hall of Fame. There's no way that Pete Rose is not in the Hall of Fame because of his play on the damn field. It's because he gambled. Like, that's ridiculous.
Correct.
That's going to be our next hour and a half long show, Ty. Nas, I'm going to bring it over to you. You know, I understand it's hard to penalize players, but, like, to me, the thing that really bugs me the most about this is that, you know, Manfred saying, hey, we've taken the appropriate action. I don't care. I'm not saying give it to the Dodgers, Ty. I'm saying vacate the title. They don't deserve to get credit for that title. I think the players should have been punished in some way, shape, or form. But, Nas, what's your thoughts?
If you guys remember The Godfather, you remember what he said. I need a wartime consigliere. When you're talking about the MLB or any sports league, if you have a situation where ownership wants to turn the page and tell everybody you didn't see what you think you saw, you need a commissioner that's going to go in there and kind of beat up on the owners and force his levers to be able to say, no, we got a bigger problem than that. We have to suspend players. We have to vacate the chip. Like, we have to do all these things. But, no, you have a commissioner in the MLB who basically conceded to ownership. Ownership wants to keep things moving. They want to get this off the news cycle, off the front page, and say, hey, it happened. Let's keep going. Let's keep going. Punish the managers. Things are done. Let's keep going. So this is what happened. He went against ownership. He lost, or he bended quickly, and ownership got their wish. But we're just turning the page. No punishment. No real investigation. And this is where we are. So you need a strong commissioner to do something like that. This guy wasn't up to the task. He works for the owners.
Yeah, and you know, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate, Nas, because I really, truly believe that if baseball would have appropriately addressed this, and fans, media, and just people in general would have felt like there was an appropriate punishment for the action, I don't think this would have been as big of a story. But to me, the bigger story isn't the cheating. I mean, listen, we've all played sports. We've all, you know, you're all trying to.
Right.
Correct. The cover-up was way worse than the crime, and I think that that's what gives MLB the bad look. you know, not necessarily just that the players were doing it, hey, that's not a good look, but that the face of your organization basically is willing to concede and sweep this under the rug as opposed to have to actually do any kind of due diligence and exact any kind of, you know, punishment. And it's just a bad look. Matt, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you guys are hitting the nail on the head. And I know I was talking trash about the Dodgers, but I really do kind of feel for them for how that all went down. You know, for me to say that they could not win it, that they're chokers, I don't know. If the other team was cheating as bad as the Houston Astros were cheating, then it is very possible the Dodgers could have won that World Series. And it's just a shame that the Houston Astros had to resort to the barbaric tactics of banging trash cans. And, yes, I thought about it, and I played baseball recently in an adult league. And if I knew some guy was throwing a changeup, I don't know if I could hit a homer, but it could definitely place a ball where I needed to go. And I saw some of the highlights, guys, when they were banging the trash can, a lot of times you saw the ball go in the seats. So there was definitely an advantage to doing it. It's not right, you know. A lot of teams have been cheating too, though. It's not just them, but they got caught. You know, they got caught with their pants down, the expression goes. And that's a black eye. And as far as I'm concerned, and I will never say this, I hope they all get hit in the head. I hope they get pegged over 84 times this year. I think Vegas put a number on it, 83.5. They've already been hit 6 times in spring training, guys. You think any of these teams care about the Houston Astros? They don't give a rat about those cheaters. I want to see them suffer. I want to see them get 100 losses this year. I know they still allegedly have talent. We'll see about that. I want to see the Astros be the worst team in baseball. I would love it.
As an Angels fan, I would as well. Boys, we got about 4 minutes left. I really appreciate all you guys showing up here at the Callers Cookout. We talked about a lot of topics. We didn't get to our NFL stuff, but we'll definitely discuss that on the Monday NFL free-for-all, and then we also have the Sunday morning brunch coming up on Sunday. But, Nas, I want to come over to you first. Any final thoughts, anything you'd like to touch on that maybe we didn't touch on, plugs, closeouts, anything before we close up the kitchen here tonight?
Look, well, since you brought up the NFL, everybody check out Robert Griffin III, RG3, check out his timeline. There's a lot of players having a discussion tonight about that proposal from the league, and they are not happy. So this is going to be interesting, man. We may have a labor fight. Let's see if the NFLPA can actually stand up for themselves and push back against ownership. But, yeah, check out the timeline, man. Player Aaron Rodgers has been kind of open about it. It's been interesting, man.
Yeah, that's a great point, man, and it's definitely something we'll have to touch on later in the week. Matt, thanks for joining us tonight. Give me a final thought, a closeout, a plug. Anything you'd like to touch on here before we close up?
Well, we kept it real tonight, guys. We all have our favorite teams. It's fun to jostle back and forth. I had to throw in that shout-out to the Braves Twins way back in the day. Could we ever see a Braves Twins World Series again? I know me and Ty would be dying to get those tickets if that ever happened. I would probably have to fly up to Minnesota to catch a game and hopefully catch a game here where I live. But thanks for having me. Breaking news, Brian Hughes, Ty, Timeless, Nas, good to talk to y'all. Enjoy the rest of your week and enjoy the sports because we're talking about sports.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a pleasure tonight, gentlemen, to talk with you. PP Timeless, we talked about a lot of stuff that got a little heated at times here in the kitchen, but that's the way we do it. For those listening for the first time, give me a final thought here inside the kitchen you built.
I'm used to all of you, Brian, you Matthews, you Nas's. I'm used to all of you, okay? I've dealt with Nas for years now. Nas coming here talking about my Twins. He coming here talking about my Thunder. I didn't even know he had it in for my Twins. He's talking about my Twins, and then you got Matt feeling some type of way about 1991 when Kirby said we gonna win Game 6, and we won Game 6, and Captain Jack took him out Game 7. Won nothing. We shut the door on the Braves. What about Game 7, though? Talk about Game 7. How Captain Jack shut the door. Like, tell me this.
That was the pirate at the kitchen table, Ty. Yeah. He didn't like the comment.
That was a good mute button. And then on top of that, the OKC Thunder, good job messing up your lottery pick. The Atlanta Hawks will gladly take it and keep building our team. Y'all can make the playoffs and get beat by a million by the Lakers in the first round. Good luck with that.
Hey, you know what? Ty did drop, and I'm sure he's going to regret that.
I'm glad I got that final closeout.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. I'm sure he's not going to appreciate that, but – but, yeah, you know what? He likes to talk about his Thunder and how well they're doing. Right now they'd have a first round against the Clippers, and I think it'd be 4-0 personally. But that's a whole other topic for a whole other day. Hey, listen, boys, it was a pleasure. It was an honor, a privilege to talk to you guys tonight about sports. It was awesome to talk baseball, to talk boxing, to hit all the different sports. We focus so much on the hardwood. In the NFL, that I feel like some of these other sports don't get the attention that they should. But from all of us here at the Sports City Chefs, we do appreciate you guys. I just wanted to say thank you so much for listening to the show. Please check out the website at www.sportcitychefs.com. You can also find us on Facebook under the same title. From all of us here at the Chefs, we appreciate you again, and we're out. We'll see you on our next episode on Sunday. Thank you.